Thank you, Chris. You set the bar high and the challenge is wide. To join you in discussing those challenges, I'd like to invite Rob Jeffries and Deidre Wilmot to the podium. And while they're moving their way here, I'd like to say something about them. Rob is the principal of Rob Jeffries and Associates. But more importantly than that, he was formerly the chief executive of the Geraldton City Council. And even more important than that, he's currently the deputy chairman and chief executive officer of the Geraldton Iron Ore Alliance, which is made up of five iron ore companies, which are at various stages of developing their projects in the Midwest: Asia Iron Holdings, Crosslands Resources, Jindalby Metals, Golden West Resources, Sinosteel Midwest Corporation. And I don't need to say too much more for you to conclude that he's very well qualified to be on the podium today. And with him is Deidre Wilmot, the Cabinet Secretary and Chief of Staff to the Premier and the Minister for State Development. Deidre advises the Premier and attends Cabinet. I think I got the order right in describing it that way. But more importantly, she has a key role in the delivery of major projects which are part of the agenda for this government and, to be fair, for previous governments of this state, and has been intimately involved with the development of the current Oakajee initiatives, which bring us to this function today. And we welcome Deidre and Rob to the podium to join Chris in a Q&A session. And before we start that off, and perhaps to get your thoughts flying a bit further, Rob and Deidre have prepared a few opening remarks, and I'll invite Rob to make a few remarks and then pass over to Deidre.
Thank you. Oakajee Port and the planned rail system that's going to connect the major iron ore mines across the region is a long-awaited project, and it's got enormous support across the Midwest region, I can assure you, both at a community as well as an industry and business level. It's not only going to enable the development of a significant new iron ore province, but it'll open up the potential for a range of resources development right across the region, which we hope will extend well beyond iron ore into the future. It will also open up some really exciting opportunities for large-scale industry development in the industrial estate adjacent to the deepwater port. In the very short time that I've got available, I'm going to pick up on just one point, and it's a point that Chris has spoken on about the complexity of this whole exercise. But I want to share with you how that complexity extends right across into our industry. So the major point that I guess I want to make is that at the end of the day, to create a sustainable and a viable port, the overarching strategy, of which Oakajee is a very important part, must be a focus on the development of a viable and a sustainable iron ore industry. Oakajee Port and other key infrastructure in the region are key enablers of that development. The port has been developed, or it's been reported that the port has been identified by the Premier as the most significant state infrastructure project for the next 50 years. And we certainly endorse that statement, its potential, and the enormous value to the Midwest region and to the state of Western Australia. And I must say, on behalf of the industry, and I think I speak also very confidently on the people of the Midwest, we're very appreciative of the efforts that the Premier and the ministers involved have given to lead this project forward and to support it. But I want to put a little bit of context around the Midwest iron ore industry, because it's quite unique in a number of ways. It consists of geographically spread projects of a small to medium scale, with a number of these in areas of high conservation value. So that means that we face very significant infrastructure challenges that Chris has spoken of, but also a range of other challenges, importantly approvals challenges to get our projects up and away. The industry has also been the focus of some fairly negative comment from a number of economic commentators in the initial stages of the global financial downturn, but is proving to be incredibly robust despite these difficult circumstances. And in fact, I've even seen it hailed in some quarters as a potential model for others. So in these circumstances, the key issue that I want to put forward in relation to Oakajee's development, and it's something that Chris has really alluded to, is that no single mine in the Midwest can sustain this level of investment alone, and probably no two single mines can do so either. At the end of the day, I expect that the financial feasibility is likely to require at least three significant iron ore mines in the initial stages, and its long-term success is going to be through achieving continuing throughput from planned mines over the next few decades at least. And further, to my knowledge at least, there's no other major bulk export commodity or industry planned in our region in the near future. The bottom line is that our miners, the infrastructure providers and government must have a clear agenda to work together to develop a long-term, viable and sustainable iron ore industry. If we're going to have a successful port, which is very much part of that industry, and we're going to have individual successful mines or collectively successful mining projects. With that comes the necessity to realise that every decision relating to the progress of the region's iron ore mines or any element of that infrastructure are all connected. And we must have strong coordination across all these projects with common timelines and very high levels of communication across all those parties. And we're very pleased to say that a lot of those discussions and that work has been initiated. The planning also needs to extend across the initial staging of the mines and infrastructure, and encompasses infrastructure outside of Oakajee, for example, the Geraldton port, water supply, the regional road system, and very importantly at this stage, power supply to the region. The members of the Geraldton Iron Ore Alliance, which represent all the major iron ore users that are planning to use Oakajee, are ready to enthusiastically and cooperatively play our part in this exercise, because while those challenges I alluded to are very significant, so are the regional benefits and the positive outcomes that will come from this industry's development.
Thank you, Rob. And Deidre, I think you've also prepared some thoughts from the government perspective.
Thank you very much, John, and thank you very much for the opportunity to come and speak to you this morning about this project. As you've heard, the Premier, Colin Barnett, has described this the Oakajee Port and Rail project as the most important project for Western Australia's economic development over the next 50 years. It's about opening up the Midwest region, providing the state with a major deep water seaport, and providing the state with a world-class industrial estate. So my key message to you this morning is that this project has the very strong and determined backing of this government. Oakajee Port, together with the planned infrastructure, will open up the Midwest by unlocking the vast and diverse mineral wealth of the region. The current JORC-compliant measured and indicated iron ore resources in the Midwest total more than 300 million tonnes of direct shipping ore and just under 3 billion tonnes of magnetite. It's anticipated that this resource will be significantly increased as a result of ongoing drilling programs in the area. As you know, the project has a long history. For over 30 years, Oakajee has been the preferred location for a deepwater port in the Midwest region. In the 1990s, then coalition government started work to realise this vision, but the steel mill that was proposed at that time didn't proceed following the Asian financial crisis, and the early part of this decade saw the plans for the Oakajee port shelved with a focus going into expanding the Port of Geraldton. But as you know, that all changed a few years ago as iron ore prospects began to drive demand for increased port infrastructure. The Geraldton port faces capacity constraints which Otago Port will overcome. It will be able to take the larger Capesize vessels, and importantly it will allow new development to occur away from existing commercial and residential areas within the city. This itself will support Geraldton's continued development as a major regional, urban, commercial and tourism centre. Just turning to the world-class industrial estate, a major part of the vision for Otago is a fully serviced 6,500 hectare heavy industrial park to significantly increase the state's international competitiveness in attracting new investment in resources processing and export industries. The state government purchased the land for an industrial estate at Otago in the 1990s. This land will now be developed by Land Corp. Structure planning is already underway and due for completion in 18 months. Of that 6,500 hectares, there will be approximately 1,100 hectares in the heavy industrial core, 200 hectares for general support industry, and 1,000 hectares for a coastal port zone and a 4,100 hectare buffer. Marketing will commence next year with the current expectation that land will be available in 2013-14 to coincide with the operation of the port. Western Australia has a shortage of project-ready industrial land with easy access to integrated export facilities. Competition for foreign direct investment is fierce, and the provision of so-called plug-and-play infrastructure will ensure that Western Australia offers comparative, if not better, infrastructure than our competitors. A new minerals processing precinct would provide an opportunity for the state to attract its existing customers and new entrants to value add our resources here in this state. Already the state has received a number of inquiries from foreign investors who have expressed an interest in establishing steelmaking operations at Otago. This project is of huge significance to Western Australia, but it is also of great importance to our trading partners from China, Japan and Korea, including those who have invested in the region and those who wish to purchase the resources. In view of the significance of the project, the Liberal National Government has committed to government funding to build the common use infrastructure at the port, including the channel, the breakwater, turning circle and navigational aids. This will cost almost $700 million, and the state government has submitted a proposal to the federal government to fund half of this amount through Infrastructure Australia. We're confident through our discussions with the federal government that they also see Otago as a major national priority. This was highlighted by last week's FIRB approval for Jindalby's Chinese joint venture partner Ansteel's increased investment in the Carrara iron ore project, which was made conditional on the project supporting the Otago port by using it when it becomes available. So in conclusion, the Liberal National Government was very pleased to be able to take the next step in this major project with the signing of the development agreement with OPR on the 20th of March this year. We now have in place a steering committee chaired by the Director General of the Department of State Development, Anne Nolan, to bring together all the agencies involved in delivering this project. And just as OPR is working with a wide range of people to deliver the project, so we must in government too. We very much look forward to OPR moving towards bankable feasibility and the signing of the implementation agreement in March next year. So thank you very much.
We now have time for questions. Well, while you're thinking about questions, I have one for the panel. You've stressed across all of the addresses, you know, coordination. And I guess firstly to Chris, I mean, from your perspective, what is the optimal timing for inputs from the mines and the impact that will have on the conduct of the feasibility studies?
Well, thanks, John. Look, we're in the process now of meeting with all of the three key mines in commercial operation, Crosslands, Jindalby and Midwest, with whom we're meeting this afternoon. The optimal timing is really right now. I mean, we're in the middle of the planning of the BFS phase. This will engage those mines in a discussion around their products, the volumes of those products, their timing and the tonnages they propose. It's not, of course, correct to assume that an iron ore mine produces only one product. I mean, at the minimum, it probably produces three and maybe even more. that means the cargo assembly task can become quite complex. Also, it has a direct impact on the materials handling gear. When this project is complete, it will probably be the largest magnetite supply chain in Australia, if not one of the largest in the world. And the magnetite handling characteristics of Jindalby fine magnetite is quite particular. So the more technical exchange we can have, the earlier the better. It will enable us to plan our commercial and technical program working out over the next 6 to 12 months. And we're looking for active engagement with all the mines in the region. I've also been approached by a number of emerging mines who are asking us to quote transportation tariffs, and it's simply premature until we understand what the real tonnages are, those are that are prepared to commit up front now, and on the back of which we can scale our assets. But it's looking like there will be absolutely no problem in reaching our 35 million tonne planning estimate.
Hilary Hunt, Minter Ellison. Chris, you talked a lot about cooperation and the importance of variability. And if there's one thing that's been learned in a lot of infrastructure projects, it's that their failure is usually because of a lack of cooperation or a breakdown amongst the people involved. To what extent does you talked before about analysing bids, to what extent do you have the ability within that process to look beyond cost and unitary cost and look to actual the people and the cooperation that you'd expect, and more importantly, the actual your belief in the deliverables of maintenance following the project?
Well, they're obviously very important aspects in the evaluation of any bid, as is cost. But it's not much point us signing up the cheapest contractor only to find they fall over, or to find they produce products of variable quality that don't meet our specifications. A capacity to execute the works in accordance with specification and time is going to be absolutely critical. And I think we are, of course, very heavily influenced by matters of price. I mean, if you were one of our mines, you would want me to explain in great detail why I've selected a particular supplier that will visit long-term greater cost on you after financing than one other which may be more price-worthy. However, what you can't afford to have happen is a situation arise where the supply chain is at risk because the consequences of lost revenue for the supply chain sponsors and investors are very significant. Like all infrastructure projects, most of our cost profile is fixed cost. So I have to be available and I have to be utilised and we have to run. So doing a reliability, availability, maintainability analysis on items of equipment and emphasising the importance of availability and utilisation of, for example, berth design and shiploaders is fundamental to the business case. Now, in translating those overarching business objectives into the evaluation of each tender, yes, we'll be paying very real and direct attention to who is the contracting counterparty, what is their financial strength, what is their capacity to execute the work, but obviously also we'll be interested in the price.
Deirdre, you mentioned that Landcore would be commence marketing Oakajee in the near future. Does that mean then that by 2013 all the infrastructure will be in place, ready for settlement by 2013? Like, you know, your design work, and if so, when will the design work for the actual estate start?
That's obviously a huge part of the planning process, is actually to deliver a fully serviced industrial estate. And I guess to some extent the timing of the delivery of those services will be driven by the extent and interest in demand. So it'll be like Chris's description of the operation of the port. We'll need to go out, we'll need to look for demand, we'll need to look for what services are there, and then plan how to deliver those services in there. And that in itself is a huge task.
John, Barry, just to add to that, what will be done by 2013 will be fuel bunkering, rail workshops, a desalination plant, so the provision of water, fuel oil for bunkering the trains, and of course the workshops. Most of those uses won't be actually in the industrial estate, but will be in the land that we will lease surrounding the industrial estate as they're part of our project. And we believe that whether it's a gas lateral from the DBNGP or whether it's coal-fired power from points to the south of Geraldton or renewable energy, electricity will also be available for reticulation at that time because we'll need it and we'll be a long-term customer for the rail workshops, for example. So we would think that come the end of 2013, as Deirdre says, structure planning will follow the market and respond to market demand, but take some comfort from the fact that as far as we're concerned, there'll be a base level of infrastructure available at that point.
We've got time for just, I think, a couple more questions. One on the right here first.
What process is envisaged and with what sort of timing to appoint a rail operator?
I guess this one's to me again. We're in negotiation with our operator, which we have been in negotiation with for over 12 months, which is ARG, that is Above Rail Operations, I assume that's what you're referring to. I think those discussions are ongoing. As the asset owner, it's important for you to realise we're not necessarily the rail operator. In fact, quite frankly, I'd prefer not to be the rail operator. I've got enough on my plate as the asset owner. But there are a number of alternatives which we have available. Obviously, the first and top of the list is a group with whom we've been negotiating for some time, which is ARG, the subsidiary of QR. However, there are others emerging, and a day doesn't go by where we don't get a call. And that includes not only Asciano, but also potentially the new owners of some of the Asciano assets. I noticed today in today's paper there are four bids in for certain of the key assets of Asciano, Toll Holdings. And there are other options as well. And, of course, we do have the option at the end of the day of building our own operating capability, which, of course, is what has been done in the Pilbara. Now, that is not something we would naturally prefer to do because of the risk it entails, and it's not something we would do lightly because of all of the rail accreditation issues, training, driver training issues, and the impact that that would have on our business model where we're seeking to spread risk in terms of operations and around our trade path scheduling. However, it is an option that we are looking at as well. The timetable will be for the appointment, I think, coincident with financial close, when we get to a point where we can offer our investors, the government and the bank group certainty as to the management of the operating risk.
We've got a question here on the right.
Ian Williams.
But be brief, please.
Working? Yeah. Mine's a bit of a follow-up question from the one before last about the industrial estate. And I was just wondering, perhaps, Deirdre, whether you could explain what's happening about the port side activity for the estate. Because clearly the iron ore berth will not suit general cargo, and I just would like to know what's been planned for general purpose berths associated with that estate.
Yes, that's quite right, Ian. As Chris emphasised in his presentation, he's focused on the iron ore and the proposal that on which requests for proposals or the RFP process was run last year was around an iron ore port. But one of the things that this government has moved to make sure, and in particular by investing in the common use infrastructure, is that there will be room in the port to expand its operations to include a multi-purpose facility as the need for that facility arrives. So there will be some space within the existing configuration, but importantly there will also be the opportunity in future to expand the port. So that's an important part of the design to basically bring the infrastructure in, the initial channel and breakwater around the iron ore opportunities that currently exist, but to make sure that we have opportunities to expand incrementally over the years as opportunities are realised.